podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Because that will be the same. It's not me sitting here like a fan telling you that's how I feel. I'm telling you that's how the majority of the stadium will feel.
Don't you want to keep your league record against City?
Who gives a about that, mate?
The Fantasy Football Show.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Planet FPL, the world where everything revolves around Fantasy Premier League. My name is Hutch.
My name is James. I'm a little bit hoarse this morning.
Horse. Went down Tottenham yesterday, shouted at them.
Basically, yeah.
For the last 10 minutes, when you thought you might have had a hope.
Chatted a lot because the shitter we are. I mean, we wasn't actually shit yesterday. We'll talk about it later. The more they need me, the louder I'm going to be. And that's okay. The loudest I had to be for a while because I needed help.
Yeah. I mean, you made a fist of it towards the end, but obviously you did yourself no favours by going 3-0 down by half time yesterday.
No shit, Sherlock.
I don't doubt that you're a little bit hoarse. Did your wild card make you feel any better?
No.
Okay.
Listen, what is it the kids would say? We feasted with the free hit in 34. So,
famine.
Almost inevitable. I mean, to be honest, the pain on this week, obviously, equally as well, is those who carried the Arsenal players. Saka and Havertz, particularly, is kind of what's led to.
Has done well.
The red, and for myself as well.
I mean, all the players so far for me and probably for you that have done all right will be single game week players so far, because we haven't had anything out of my, apart from Sun yesterday, double game week players, nothing.
Yeah, carried for me Isak and Gordon, 23 points. I'll take the Onana and Fernandez, 8 points in a 1-1 draw with no penalty saves or goals or assists or anything. We'll take that. I'm quite happy with my choices though, Suge. Haaland come off the bench for me for Foden, as will have been the case for many people, probably the majority of wild cards this week. Haaland, five. Just a goal, wasn't it? Plus the one point.
No BPS, okay.
Yeah. But quite happy with the choices I made. Like, you can look at it in reflection. Oh my God, you benched Vardy, I was 15 points. That's what I got him in for. Not to do it this week, though. I said, I'm looking for the 15-pointer against Wolves. So the bastard peaked a week too early, unfortunately. But who would I have left out instead? A double R or Cher at home to Sheffield United? Nah. And actually, I'm quite happy with the Cucurella pick as well, despite the own goal. You can hate the outcome, but the decision for me, because I'm not on bench boost, was just pure on 35. And when I see him playing near enough left wing back in the first half, then going into midfield in the second half, he certainly should have ended up with an attacking return somehow. He's put the one on the plate for Jackson, which has hit the post, and he created a couple of other chances as well, actually. So I'm not unhappy with the Cucurella pick. I'm not unhappy with the choices I made on wild card. As much as I would have wanted to fit in an Arsenal attacking player, for example, I don't know which one of that midfield lot I'd have left out. I mean, in hindsight, if I know Foden's not going to turn up, but in all seriousness, if I'd known Foden wasn't going to turn up, I'd have just picked Brennan Johnson.
Yep, so, and he didn't. I mean, he had to come on early in the end, but he obviously didn't start for you yesterday.
Well, he'll start the games now.
Any very little problems doubt coming out of your wild card? Cher, obviously, has gone off injured.
Yeah.
We don't know the extent of that fully.
But it's not...
anyone else?
I should probably just clarify what I went with. So I went Onana and Raya. I went Porro, Cher, Cucurella, Vardy, Gabriel, Palmer, Foden, Fernandez, Son, Gordon, Isak, Jackson, and Haaland. So in terms of problems coming out of the weekend, yes, Fabian Cher, yellow flagged. I didn't have the intention of starting him this week anyway. Tight hamstring, I would suggest he probably does come back and play. But because they're away record and Chelsea being at home, I would have picked Cucurella over him anyway. With the fixtures this weekend, it was definitely going to be Vardy and Gabriel for me at the back, and also bench Porro away to Liverpool. So that's not an immediate, like, oh, shit yourself, I've got to deal with it now. It feels like it's more important things. The intention would have been to roll this week. The only transfer really on my mind is there a way to get an Arsenal attacker in this week? But whatever I get in, I may want to reverse, right?
Yeah, this is...
And obviously, because I'm not bench boosting 37, I can afford the luxury of doing that a little bit more. And clearly Havertz would be the one. He's actually, I'll quote our good friend Late Riser, I saw he put a stat on X, Twitter, that Havertz is the highest scoring player in the game since game at 24.
Oh, wow. Nice. He has been it's on only quite a roll.
Cole Palmer's on 100 points over that period. Kai Havertz, I think, it's 103.
This is one of the problems with focusing on doubles when you're a wild card and looking too far in the future. You can sometimes miss the stuff right in front of your eyes. And Arsenal attacking was one of those. Like, we all, coming out of wild card, were recommending keep one defender at least, keep a Gabriel or a Saliba, but we didn't recommend keep one attacker at least out of the.
But it just wasn't
Arsenal.
Really a way to fit it in for wild card.
I know. Look, my
who were you going to leave out?
My wild card midfield is almost the same as yours, bar one player.
The front eight I read out is what most people have gone with.
Yeah, mine's slightly different, but I get it. Yeah, difficult. Look, yeah, so you've only got Cher, and we don't know what's going on with Cher in terms of flags. And
I think he'll probably be all right, is my instinct. Tight hamstring.
Hopefully, fingers crossed.
Sheffield United at home, did they have to risk him? No. I mean, they don't have to risk him under their circumstance anyway, but I wouldn't be at all surprised if he plays at the weekend, actually.
Yep. I also wildcarded James. I'm sitting, as it stands right now, on 62 points, which is giving me a green arrow. Which has gone from 1.35 to 1.87. So it's not too bad. I've still got four to go.
1.87.
1.187. Sorry.
Well done. Yeah.
I went with three Spurs, mate. Three Spurs. Vicario.
You went double defensive.
Vicario, Porro, and
you'll know what I thought of that.
Yeah. But also, Chelsea, again, were rubbish. So
that said, I also told people to examine themselves if they were going to get Romero or Van der Ven. Yeah. Van der Ven's obviously had the goal disallowed for marginal offside.
Romero's star striker yesterday.
Romero's had a mad one.
Yeah. So Sonny obviously returned with the 7-pointer. I went with two Chelsea, Palmer, who I armbanded, and I'm sure you did too as well.
Yeah,
right?
Most people did. Yeah.
And Jackson. So nothing there. But my two City were different to yours, and I played them. So I went with Kyle Walker, and I went with Kevin De Bruyne. I had loads of excess money, and my problem was if I'm coming off Haaland or Salah, I almost basically am never going to come back to them between now and the end of the season. There's so much money to burn. I thought, why not go De Bruyne over Foden?
At your position, I certainly don't mind you went different either, right?
Yeah, and so he returned an 11-pointer. I had Bruno Fernandes as well, and Gordon and Isak. The 62 points. The story of the week for me, James, is BPS, because Isak, Gordon, De Bruyne, Bruno Fernandes, Kyle Walker, like 20% of my score is BPS this week, and they've done well. My bench: Edison, Hoyland, Cher, Maguire. Edison's the problem now. But again, what do we know? What don't we know? He came off half time, right?
He left the City ground with his arm in a sling.
Right.
Which I would suggest for a goalkeeper is particularly
bad. It's probably
bad.
Yeah. Did he dislocate his shoulder or something? No.
Well, he had a challenge with Willy Bolly in the first half, and he obviously stayed on, but that's where I think he picked up the injury.
Right. He was always there as my bench boost keeper for 37. So I've got no intention of making a transfer this week and rolling. So
who's your other keeper?
A Vicario.
I mean, I'd just be going Ortega now, I think, Suj.
Or just getting it done.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to play Vicario at Liverpool?
No, I was thinking about David Raya and then Daisy Cheney again. If I've got no outfield problems,
goalkeeper transfers.
No outfield problems.
If Edison's ruled out for the season, you're just going to buy Ortega, aren't you?
That makes sense.
Just do it.
Yep. But I need it for bench boost, so I can, and I've got no issue with money, so I could wait another week.
You've already
just do it
when
I need
with
it.
What you've done, the only thing is, I mean, for you, it would cut you off of Foden, I'm guessing. Is the only one. As you said, you're not going to go back for Haaland with your structure. No. So it's only cutting you off of Foden. So if you're happy to go
there's
against that.
There's no one
that,
for my midfield that I'm going to sell. Like all of my midfield then has a double in 37.
It's quite straightforward.
De Bruyne, Palmer, Fernandes, Gordon, Son, all doubling in 37, mate.
Anyone who's got Edison, is if he's ruled out, is just going to buy Ortega, aren't they?
Yeah, likely.
Just be a really popular transfer. I know there's a lot of, well, you don't need the money at this stage. And the value of the keeper, by the way, people say, oh, he's 3.7 or whatever. I mean, that doesn't matter at this stage unless it involves, and it might do, a scenario that allows you to go from Gordon to Havertz in 38, for example, which you might not have been able to. That sort of move might help you further down the line. But the value is largely irrelevant, isn't it? That you chose the City goalkeeper, one of them's injured. I mean, the beauty of it is now, there was a lot of, well, if City got the title won, could Edison get dropped? Well, that presumably wouldn't happen to Ortega. Scott Carson says hello, by the way. But presumably that wouldn't happen. Ortega would just play.
Yep. I have no idea from my front eight who I'm benching this week.
I do.
I've got Fernandes and Hoyland, Crystal Palace away. Sonny's at Liverpool away.
That's the one.
you're not happy with him. Obviously, Newcastle boys got Burnley away. Wolves at home for De Bruyne and West Ham at home for the Chelsea boys. I think I might bench Rasmus Højlund again.
Yeah, that's reasonable.
Because Liverpool aren't in great shape either. I mean, who knows what team Klopp's even going
to
choose?
You know, I said to you on our Patreon pod on Friday,
Sonny could hurt Liverpool.
Well, no. I think there's every chance we'll win at Liverpool this weekend.
Yeah.
And I wanted to make that point to you before yesterday, irrespective of
what happened.
Shall
I play Porro as well then? Over Maguire. Porro's
obviously Maguire at Palace. Could you see him keeping the clean sheet?
No.
I've lost count how many times you and I have said over the last couple of weeks, Palace will beat United. So, yeah, they'll be way too good structurally for Manchester United, I should imagine, on Monday.
Yeah. So, I mean, if I'm not making any other moves, I can easily fix the Edison thing this week. The only thing is, I don't need it this week. So if I don't need to fix it this week, I may as well just roll.
What, the Edison thing?
Yeah.
But you do. You've got Ortega at home to Wolves or Vicario at Liverpool.
I guess, I suppose, yeah.
The only way Vicario's hauling for you at Liverpool is if he saves a penalty, mate.
You think you're not going to keep a clean sheet?
Come on, man. When I say I think there's every chance we might win at Liverpool at the weekend, it's like 3-2 or something like that, mate.
Okay. Okay. Let's get through some of these games then, shall we?
Let's do it.
Start with a Desmond at the London Stadium. West Ham 2, Liverpool 2. Thrilling.
I mean, the first half was not.
Thrilling, James. It was so exciting, the first half. Honestly,
the headline from this, again, of course, and for fantasy purposes as well, is that, well, A, Liverpool can't win the league now. I think that's, it's all right to write them off, isn't it?
Yeah.
We'd certainly be talking point. You're right there, babe. Do you need to, is that a bit, it's mum, isn't it?
Nah, it's my mate, he's a gooner as well.
Tell him I said, no, cough.
Not going to rub in any more misery obviously, after the North London derby, mate.
Sit down. Stand down. Klopp's selection and obviously the Salah bust up.
Well, yeah, I mean, he says he's dealt with it. Salah obviously was in a pretty fiery mood.
Well,
after.
Klopp said he dealt with it and Salah said, I'll be spitting fire if I speak now. So,
what do you make of it?
I get Salah's frustrated. He's possibly frustrated with himself and his own form recently. I think the fact he got benched after the game Wednesday night, not because of his performance Wednesday night, but just the close proximity of the games, shouldn't come as a big surprise.
Do you think he was mad, though, because he was benched?
It was also... Was it like,
you've benched me and we're losing now, or...
When he went to bring him on, they were winning,
They were winning, that's the thing.
I guess you could look at it and say it was strange that he was only going to get used in, like, minute 77 or whenever it was that he came on. But I've never thought it was anything other than a good relationship between those two. I imagine Jurgen Klopp probably has nipped it in the bud. I would be very surprised if Salah didn't start against Tottenham.
Yep.
Because you suddenly that becomes the headline of Klopp's closure is, and he's not picking Mo Salah. Yeah.
There's only three games to go.
He'll stick him back in the team. I'm pretty confident of that. So, and I imagine it's something we'll quickly forget about. It's probably just a show as well of frustration. They have let it slip, haven't they? And they were kind of always outsiders in the race. The reality is they've dropped, 8 points from games against Palace, Everton and West Ham. And frankly, if you do that in a run-in, Liverpool fans don't need telling you're not going to win the league under that circumstance.
They've still got tough games with Spurs and then Villa away. And Wolves at home on the last day is going to be difficult. Based on how good Arsenal and City are at the moment, they're not going to win the league.
I think
we'll largely end up ignoring Liverpool players between now and the
I
run
think
in.
So.
And they'll still score points, I just don't see any need to go there.
I can see narratives of, you know, Klopp's last game at Anfield, even with nothing to play for, wanting to put a salary in or, you know, taking a last day punt for a Luis Diaz or, you know, people might be so sick of Nicholas Jackson looking at Darwin Nunes. I can see that sort of thing. Or suddenly someone's got excess money and wants to punt Trent.
Jumping out of the cauldron into the fire, they say.
These sort of things are
Nunes is the worst possible transfer.
Ultimately, right now, I mean, you know, Salah speaks for himself historically, but if you've got a choice at the moment of an Arsenal player or a Liverpool player, you're going the Arsenal player, aren't you?
Yeah. I'd even take Kevin De Bruyne over Salah at this time of the season. This is when he comes good.
Well, for people who have only got two City, and I guess there's a question mark there for those who are still on Salah, and there will be plenty. Obviously, those who carried through 34 may have sold, may not have, but those who held might be looking at that as saying, well, most wildcards haven't gone Kevin De Bruyne, can either look at that sort of thing. And I think, yeah, that's reasonable. I think a lot probably did end up selling, purely because the news was quite clear in the hour before deadline that Salah was going to be on the bench. So those who were hesitating, I think, made their moves. And you might have quite a number of people have got excess cash at the moment. Certainly from my deadline training with people talking about moves like Salah to Gordon and stuff like that. So it might be that people have got excess money going into this week. That, of course, does allow to go back in. And I think Salah would start this Sunday against Tottenham, and against that team, there's every chance he'll return, right? West Ham, there's no interest.
Yeah, ignore.
Moving forward.
Three games between ending the season. Chelsea away, City as well, last of the season. Just
The only thing I would add in and say is I think Jarrod Bowen will possibly be the best single game week asset in game week 37, and no one will have him.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with you. Last home game of the season.
It would just get overlooked because there's too many midfield options with the double in 37. But if people are looking for something very different, it's, you know, it's a regular question. What do I do to catch up in the mini league? Well, you swing against, really swing against. There's every chance Luton will come to West Ham subject to the results this week and maybe need to win. And I just feel like that's a perfect scenario set up for you and him especially. And despite injury concerns recently, I thought his performance at the weekend was fine.
I thought he looked quite sharp.
Could have got more than the one goal and assist, actually. The cross for Antonio's lovely. Another headed goal.
How many headers this season?
No, he's really added it to his game this season.
He's in good form,
And I think you would, if you were looking for that for a punt, you would prefer that to Kudus or Paquetá, 100%. I think.
It's Bowen or nothing at the moment.
Antonio's on a good little run.
He is. He's playing well, but the returns don't always seem to match. He's usually providing more than he is getting on the end of stuff. I mean, he returned there, but you'd just pick Bowen.
I still think it's probably only a conversation in 37 itself if people have suddenly walked into injury problems, or maybe for the smaller crowd that is free hitting in 37. It's still Chelsea away and Man City away the other two games.
I still feel like in the double, like Antonio, if you're off a forward, you'd still go Richarlison even, who's got a double, or Hoyland. Is he a midfielder in this game?
Richie is,
I saw Richie was a striker. That's midfield. My sky hat.
Midfielder, mate.
Well, in that case, you wouldn't go him over Bowen, but maybe Hoyland, who's got a double, you'd definitely go with. Isak, it's got the double, you'd definitely go with. Even Jackson, just because it's a double. I don't see room for Ren Antonio or...
Nah. The reality is, I mean, to fit him in, even if we were free hitting in 37 and you wanted a piece of it, unless they're injured, you're certainly going Isak and Hoyland. Then you've got the likes of Jackson, Hoyland with their doubles. And then what, you're only going to pick four midfielders and fit him in? Like, you're not. And similar applies to Bowen.
Yeah, not going to work.
And I don't think, despite it being a good 37 fixture, I don't think people are going to be fitting in West Ham defenders as part of their solutions to the defensive problems.
Not going to happen.
I don't see it.
No, you're better off going to the likes of an Everton or something. Fulham 1, Palace 1. Again, two teams that are probably just going to be largely overlooked now between now and the end of the season, really. No double in 37. Both safe, both too far off Europe.
What's Palace's last game? 38?
I will tell you now.
I know Fulham are at
Villa
Luton.
At home.
Villa at home, yeah. I mean, well, Villa might have, they probably will have fourth wrapped up by then. So
yep. 7 points now.
And I think that, therefore, those two home games of Manchester United and Villa aren't that bad. And Wolves away in 37 is reasonable as well. So for those carrying through Mateta, it's not a huge problem. I think those who had Eze and didn't want to sell after the performance in 34 saw the injury doubt on Friday, and it was enough to say, okay, again, let's move this on in most scenarios. There might be a few still held on to the likes of Munoz or Jockey Manderson if they'd been prepping towards that way, and I think that's fine. It's reasonable. But yeah, you're right. Largely speaking, these two will get overlooked. Storming goal from Jeffrey Schlupp. What a goal. Ping on that. Made a beautiful noise when it hit the net as well. And obviously Muniz come back with a goal after everybody's decided they're not using him anymore. Brilliant cross and a lovely little finish. Seems like it was generally a fair result. I think Fulham people, again, because of what I've just discussed about West Ham, people might look for enabling options in 38. Like, I can see, going back to say Salah, where it's like, well, are you going to work it in with your structure? I can see people thinking, well, I'll go Jackson to Muniz. And that little difference of money might allow something like that at the end. But, you know, Mateta applies for similar reasons here. Otherwise, I can't really see people going into these for new. But, as said earlier, I think Palace will beat Manchester United on Monday night. So they won't be the worst assets to have this week.
Talking of Manchester United, 1-1 against Burnley. We were suspicious that Burnley might rock up to Old Trafford and get something out of this. And they did.
Yep.
And they did.
It speaks volumes out, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we did think like they were going to definitely have a lot of the ball and possession. Let me pull up the stats on that. I didn't double check them. But yeah, we did think that
Burnley only had 15 shots, I can tell you.
Only
which means they're 50%
shots.
Better than Sheffield United, but 100% worse than most.
Right.
There you go.
Yeah, so good result for Burnley in that, obviously, because Forest lost, so now they're within...
And Luton lost.
If they beat Forest, they would leapfrog Forest, although that's the last day of the season, isn't it?
So. Burnley have got the worst of the fixtures of the three teams down there, but have got the momentum. And also, I think, quite a powerful tour in the sense that we've all written them off. And they've got nothing to lose.
52% possession, James.
For Burnley?
Yes.
Are we surprised by that?
16 shots Burnley had.
Oh, 16, sorry.
Manchester United did have 27.
Okay, fine. Well, congratulations to Manchester United on their 27 shots this week.
2.7 XG for Manchester United.
Burnley, realistically, from an asset perspective, again, you might want to consider final day as part of a second move, a Fofana or an Amdouni or an Odegaard or something like that. Otherwise, though, I think you're largely going to overlook. The story is more about, can they stay up from here? Yes, they've got a shot. It's worth saying Newcastle-Tottenham as the next two looks tough, right? Newcastle's away record is well documented, although it's not as bad over this calendar year as it is across the whole season. I think they're kind of equal for wins and losses in 2024, but across the whole year, it's bad. And then Tottenham, who might have nothing to play for in 37. And you know that they'll have chances against my team. That even applies to them. It's probably a good fixture for Tottenham, though, because Burnley will come and play. And that's why this also really should have been a good asset for United players. It's like thinking about United and going, oh, well, I watch them and they're a bit shy. But Fernandes has been returning well. And you knew he'd have opportunities.
The stats while you're talking there, James. I'm like, that's a high XG, 2.7 on 27 shots. Just to kind of drill down, because one of my questions to you is going to be, how has Bruno picked up 2 BPS here where he's got no goals or assists or anything in the
game?
9
key passes, I think.
Yeah, and he 4 of the 7 big chances, 4 big chances. He created 4 as well. So that's that shows his involvement. That could be Hall territory, really, for Bruno Fernandes. The stats are massive. Like his
rating at Sofascore,
9.3 out of 10.
Yeah, exactly.
Says a lot. And his heat map is ridiculous as well. He's all over the pitch.
That return without... contributing an attack in return.
Yeah, it shows his involvement.
Of course it does. He was actually at full-time on top bonus. And it changed a little bit afterwards. So, I mean, any return he would have hit top bonus here. So it would have been worth more. So, yeah. I mean, Fernandes is the attacking one I went with. It's the only one I want to go with. Did nearly pull out the clean sheet for Onana. And there's a number gone for perhaps Maguire or Dallow on wild card as well.
On my bench.
Wolves fans got some justification for the game week one error that went against them. Because it was a really similar incident, wasn't it? And it's definitely a penalty. And it was given. And unlike a lot of other VAR decisions, that's one I can understand why the referee didn't give it on the pitch. And VAR does work under that scenario. I certainly wouldn't be steaming into any more United this week going to Palace, as said. Fernandes, despite his consistency, might be the make weight of a hokey cokey. It's not impossible, but my remaining three transfers are Havertz to Fernandes. Fernandes to Havertz, Havertz to Fernandes, and Fernandes to Havertz. It's not impossible that that's what I end up doing. It could be. But
we turn that into a little nursery start rhyme with the hokey cokey theme tune in the background.
I can't think of two more dislikable players, actually. And to be honest, this other than the fact he wears the red and white shirt, I haven't got too much against Kai Havertz, actually. Bruno is dislikable, as discussed many times over. But clear talisman for them, consistent. This data here says, okay, I mean, it's a technical blank, if you will, but four-pointer in FPL, despite that, he doesn't need much to be.
He's getting nowhere for me. I've got 3 Man United already stacked up in Hoyland.
I don't see me under my circumstance adding a third.
Yeah, I don't see me playing 2 of my 3 in any way, giving way in Hoyland and Maguire until I need them for bench boost. They're sitting there.
I suppose this is a debate about Monday or this weekend rather than do you bench Fernandes or Son will be maybe one people are deliberating.
Oh, that's close. I think I'd bench Son.
I mean, it's rough either way.
Think I'd bench Son.
Yeah, but at the same time, I'm sitting here, and if I'm sitting here and I think, well, United get beat, and I'm actually saying I quite fancy Tottenham on Sunday at Liverpool, then is that the right call?
That I feel like much more is a gut instinct. It feels also, like a bit of a
also feels like United take. United could go to Palace and win 2-1, and he gets both, doesn't he?
Yeah. He's and Spurs could easily do bits, and Son could get nothing. So,
what about if you throw Gordon into that conversation?
Gordon plays for me.
Gordon's only returned in 2 away games. This is the opposite. So he's only blanked in 1 home game. He's only returned, I think, in 2 away games.
Right. Yeah, I didn't know that stat. Is that a segue, James?
It can be.
Because obviously he did return with the assist at the weekend.
Two.
Two assists, sorry. 5-1 in the end. Worried for a second there, though, when Amihodzic.
I'll save you.
Managed to score in the first 5 minutes, but then normal services resumed. Two goals for Isak. Decent returns here.
Not quite normal service resumed, because by the sounds of it, there's not too many Newcastle fans would have been able to complain if Sheffield United were winning at half-time, actually.
Right.
Played well first half. Had some good moments, some good opportunities, and missed a few sitters. Then I think once they end up in a situation where they go behind against a team that can be relentless when they're playing well, the heads go down, and it, from there it feels inevitable that more goals will come.
They missed three big chances in the second half.
I was round my parents, and I literally said to my dad, I said, looking at the data, it looks like Sheffield United are unlucky to be winning. Literally, next notification, goal Newcastle.
Yep.
Goal Newcastle. It's obviously got away from them now. I think the headline one here is not not Isak or Gordon's returns, but Callum Wilson obviously being back in the team and scoring.
Well, he came off the bench, right?
Very well taken finish at the end. But I think the key takeaway here is if people are nervous, that's now two games that he's come on since returning from injury, and Isak has stayed on. And he's stayed in a central role rather than going wide. So I don't think there's an immediate threat to Isak. I also think Isak is playing way too well.
He is.
To even consider not playing him. Resting for what at this stage? So now you've got weekend. They play Burnley Saturday, then Brighton Saturday, and then United Wednesday, and then the final game at Brentford Sunday. So there's 4-day gaps. So over Newcastle's double at the end, you've got some nice spacing around that as well. Unless he gets injured, I don't see any reason why Isak won't play. And if Wilson does, it's more likely to be with him. And I wonder if they lost someone like a Gordon or Barnes offensively, if the idea could even come round to go Wilson and Isak in 37 rather than Hoyland or Jackson. Like, if you knew Wilson would play, you'd rather just have them two, wouldn't you?
Yep.
And that would be a super differential if that opportunity exists. As said earlier, I think Cher probably will play at the weekend. Tight hamstring. Apparently Eddie Howe said they wanted to take him off earlier, but Cher said he was okay to continue. Then at half-time, he was like, I can't sprint at 100%. So they took him off, no risk. So I think he'll probably be all right. He'll probably play. It's not the first time this happened with Cher, and we thought, oh, he's going to be out for a few weeks and then has played the next game. Zeno Livramento played. We're still not sure where we stand with Kieran Trippier and Nick Pope. So those who have got the Bravka maybe gambled on Livramento. It's just fingers crossed at this stage, I think. Dan Byrne. If Fabian Scher is out, he's the safest and the easiest way to go rather than kind of gambling the Livramento, I think. But also worth saying, if Scher is unavailable, do you even want Newcastle defensive?
Yeah,
some, because of the bench boost, will be forced into that.
I mean, there are other teams that have got doubles that you can go to. I don't know if I'd add a second Spurs or a second Man United.
I don't have a Chelsea
defender at the moment.
The only one I think you'd feel comfortable having double defensive City. Going into 37 is City, but then you've only got one offensive, so it's counterproductive.
I don't see them rushing Wilson into the starting 11 between now and the end of the season. He's had such a checkered history with coming in from injury and back and in and out. With four games to go, the reality is they're going to finish seventh. I can't see them. If
Newcastle?
Anything,
no, I finish sixth.
You think they'll overtake Man United?
Yeah.
But the thing is, sixth or seventh, it makes no difference. It's Europa League.
No, not true.
No?
No.
I thought City win the FA Cup, then doesn't it drop down to seventh?
No, I don't think it does. I think it's fifth and sixth are
fifth
Europa,
is Europa. Seventh will be conference.
Seventh is conference.
So sixth will be Europa. But
they'd both rather be in Europa League than a conference
league,
wouldn't
they? So what happens if City win the FA Cup? Sixth goes to Europa.
Well, I think of it like this logically. United will probably finish sixth or seventh.
And Newcastle will be sixth or seventh.
If United won the FA Cup and finished eighth, then it jumps up in terms of the Conference League place would be sixth.
Yep.
So you're kind of working on an assumption that down to seventh will get in Europe. The way it doesn't is if United finish outside of the seven, in which case then it's only the top six.
Right.
That's probably how it'll work. That's my understanding. Don't quote me on that. I might not be quite correct, but I'm pretty sure seventh will be Conference League, sixth will be Europa. I don't think Villa winning the Conference League doesn't change anything.
No.
I don't think.
Would they just go into
They'll go into the Champions League because that's where they'll finish. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, we'll see how that plays out. I do think they'll rest Callum Wilson. They'll nurse Callum Wilson back into it. He's getting on a bit now. He's 32, 33.
Yeah, but the other thing is on Wilson is the injury was tit injury, wasn't it? What are you laughing for? I've got boobs.
Pectoral muscle.
It's a pectoral muscle injury.
Torin's pectoral muscle.
But in terms of, Hal said this at the weekend as well, he said in terms of like he's built up a lot of running. Yeah. So normally he comes back and he's had an ankle problem or a knee problem problem.
Okay.
His lower part of his body, he's been able to work on it fine, right? Please don't take that the wrong way, laughing at back kids. But therefore his fitness levels are pretty good because his problem's up here. And if that's fixed, then I don't think you'll have an issue with him in terms of a setback from that perspective. It was a surprise that Harvey Barnes didn't start. And there's every chance he'll come back in for the next one. That probably is, Wednesday, Saturday, he's come back from injury. Let's not go too hard on him. But I think probably big point here is I don't think Wilson is too much of an impact on Isak. And it might even be that Wilson becomes an option along with Isak.
Two teams, again, that I don't have any interest in. I don't know if you do, James. Wolves and Luton sharing Wolves taking all the 3 points, 2-1.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to buy Wolves now going to Manchester City this weekend.
As two of the last three.
Yeah, but those who've got, I've seen Ait Nouri on a few wild cards, and I think the theory behind that was play him this week in 35 and then play him in 37 at home to Palace as a single game week player. Or even bench it if you're not bench boosting in 37, and that's perfectly reasonable. He did pick up a potential problem again at the weekend, though doesn't sound serious. Gary O'Neill was at pains to say that this was the first time Hwang and Cunha had started together since December.
Wow, that's a long time.
And that's really impacted Wolves' second half of the season, with obviously Pedro Neto being injured as well. And we do think Neto will be available before the end of the season. That's a potential impact on Sarabia, but I can't see where Sarabia would be used from here on end. I think a key point for the weekend, many of you remember obviously Wolves beat City earlier in the season. Craig Dawson did a really strong man-to-man job on Erling Haaland. It obviously stayed in Johnny Pringle's memory enough because he mentioned it on Clash of Correspondents last week in terms of that physical duel. You know, I said a few people like Gabriel Rudiger, and the first name that came to Johnny's head was what Craig Dawson did to Haaland earlier in the season. Wolves won't have that type of player to do that to Haaland at the weekend, and I think that's very notable. I can't see Wolves getting anything at City at the weekend. I hope that proves to be correct, but I can't see it. In a weird way, that almost feels like the easiest game left for City.
Possibly,
you couldn't see City slipping that one up.
I don't know. West Ham are pretty atrocious when we want to be.
No, but West Ham can hit that low block and defend the penalty area and make it awkward.
Bodies on the line,
and the longer it stays 0-0, it might get awkward. Could do, maybe. Wolves, without Dawson, I don't see being able to put that sort of shield up. I think Neto would have been... If they'd have been able to utilise Neto's pace on the break, like Forrest did with, say, Hudson-Odoi and Alanga yesterday, maybe a different game. I think Wolves will struggle to get out.
I think any of these games with City, if City score early, then like they did yesterday, it ends up just becoming very difficult. I'm with you. I don't see Wolves getting anything with City.
The best result for Luton this weekend might have been Everton beating Brentford.
Segue, James. Everton 1, Brentford 0. But let's just talk about Luton. I think they need to get a result at Everton this week.
Well, no, but that's the point. Well, Everton are now safe.
Yep.
I think even if Everton had still needed something, it would still have been on the brain. You think, well, you let them get 3 points closer, then it goes to next week. Even though we kind of knew Everton had done their business and were safe in all but maths.
Because Forest have got Sheffield United this week.
Now that it's maths done, you could see Luton beating Everton on Friday now, I think. Whereas that wouldn't have been my opinion previously. And they're helped by, obviously, they've got some offensive players back. Adebayo came back off the bench at the weekend. So you might get Adebayo and Morris together at the weekend. And I think either of them wouldn't be terrible ones to utilise for 36 and 38. There'll be a pool of people looking for players for 36 and 38. I'm not suggesting Adebayo and Morris are necessarily your best choices. But Everton at home and Fulham at home in games that they'll have to win aren't terrible. Adebayo is more risky because you don't know what his match fitness levels are going to be like and whether he'd come straight back in. So I could see a little bit of consideration for Morris. Again, if it enables different moves, i.e. for example, someone's watched the games at the weekend and gone, shit, I really want to move from Son to De Bruyne this weekend or Fernandes to De Bruyne. That little bit of money from sick of Jackson. That could be a case, and you go, right, well, I'll go Morris. Again, it's more one, I think, for those who are not bench boosting in 37. You're trying to look at different avenues, and Luton, yeah. Luton offer one, perhaps, now. With Everton at home and Fulham at home, it's against two teams who are going to have nothing to play for. Although, obviously, it's worth saying in Everton's case, every place is worth, what, £2.5 million? And Everton need every penny they can get. Everyone would be level on points with Brighton if it wasn't for the points deduction, Suj.
With Brighton, so 44 points. So they've had 8 in total, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. They did beat Brentford 1-0 at home. 4 home wins on the trot, 4 clean sheets at home on the trot. We've seen all the stats. Suddenly they're hot defensively. Branthwaite's been all right for me in another format, mate. I think I'm laughing with those points, which I didn't expect to get at all out of Jared Branthwaite. Everton defensively been all right. What happens between now and the end of the season now that they know they don't?
I saw an absolutely wild stat, which I'm going to be honest, I didn't check back to see if it was correct. But I saw that prior to this month that's just gone, Everton hadn't done the double over anybody in 4 years. As i.e. beat someone home
twice in
and
the
away.
Same season, yeah.
And they've just done it to Burnley, Forest and Brentford.
Okay.
So that, if you cluster that at 18 points from those teams in and around them, because they've gone above Brentford, right?
Yeah, they are by a point.
How important is that? Absolutely massive. I think you and I were both of the opinion always that they'd be all right.
Yeah, for sure.
To be honest, it was mainly Evertonians that didn't. I've said this before, Everton Football Club are fated never to get relegated, and I'll stand by that. But I will also caveat that by saying there's more problems to come, and next year is going to be a struggle again. It's not like, oh, we've won 3 games in a week to nil, and everything's going to be fine next season. You're going to challenge for Europe. Like, I'm sorry that you're not. But it's a really good week for them. They've obviously played this one without, obviously, Beto or Calvert-Lewin.
Yep.
Idrissa Gana-Gueye was the one you all should have gone for.
Of course.
A couple of weeks ago.
Of course.
You absolutely shouldn't.
I don't know why people didn't pick Ben Godfrey. I mean, it was obvious.
Ben Godfrey as well. Those who've had Pickford will be absolutely delighted with what they've had over the last few weeks, right? And this is it with Pickford. One of the beauties in FPL is trying to find the keeper, you know, when the clean sheets come, can hit the 10-pointers like this. And that's why he's an interesting one, Jordan Pickford. I think he'll probably be more expensive next year, ironically. Branthwaite's obviously also done really well for them. The problem with that is there'll be clubs looking at him quite clearly for a potential purchase in the summer. And that's a jewel that Everton could sell and put 100% of the profit on the books. And it'll help, unfortunately, if that's what ends up happening. And there'll certainly be some interest in them.
Yeah,
good win for Everton.
Tony back for Brentford.
I wouldn't look at them and think, hey, that's great. Now they've kept all these clean sheets. They're steaming to Everton. The moment feels like it's gone. But once again, if let's just say Fabian Scheer is ruled out for the next couple of weeks and people are sitting there, the chances are people are just going to buy Dan Burn. Oh my God, the double 37. Okay, Everton do have Sheffield United at home. Don't rule out another clean sheet. And that, again, also puts a shitload of money in your bank as well.
I realise Dan Burnwood... Sheffield United still been chipping away with goals.
Sheffield United have actually...
And they scored again.
They have actually started scoring goals recently.
I don't think that's necessarily a locked-in clean sheet there, but...
Of course it's not, but is it any worse than having a doubler?
No.
Just keep it in mind, that's all I'm going to say. You're not going to buy anything Everton offensively. Brentford are another one that I think could be looked at for those who are looking for differences for 36 and 38. It's Fulham at home this weekend, and it's Newcastle at home, 38. And I think for the offensive guys, your Bumos, etc., Vissers, that's absolutely fine. I don't think anyone's going to dive and plummet straight back into Ivan Toney, but the headline from this is that obviously he was back in, and this week we can't talk about it, so we assume everything's okay again now.
We did talk 2-3 weeks ago with the 5-6 game run-in. Brentford had the best run-in of the teams that didn't double. And they would get ignored by quite a lot. But this week they did have Vissa and Toney and Mbeumo all playing and they didn't manage to get on the score sheet. So, no, do you think they're going to be on it between now and the end of the season?
I mean, Toney
still
certainly could have with a chance there in the second half. Yeah, again, like I said, it's a regular question I get is, oh, who's good for 36 and 38, like ignoring 37, i.e. someone you can bench in 37.
If you're free hitting in 37, maybe.
So if you're not bench boosting or you're free hitting in 37. And I think what you got to consider is if you're chasing, most are going to ignore some of these we've mentioned, like Brentford, Luton, but it doesn't fill or inspire with huge confidence. Nottingham Forest is another name, right? They play Sheffield United and Burnley in 38. You are probably going into enabling players, but I mean, Ivan Toney won't get touched by no one. No one.
Yeah.
But that means there's an opportunity. But he also, he hasn't scored since, I don't know, game week 25 or something.
Yeah, he's not and one for me.
Bumo would be the one you'd want. If you said, all right, I have any Brentford attacker for the run-in at the moment, I think you'd go Bumo, but it's the precious midfield spot.
Yeah.
I'd still rather go an Arsenal player this week, personally.
The stat of the weekend, James, that surprised me most was Chelsea having 71% of the ball at Aston Villa. I know game state has a lot to do with it and the fact that they were leading, but for Villa to give up that much possession and literally just sit in for that much, I was really surprised by it. In the end, they've come unstuck and they've given away that 2-goal lead. And only got a point.
It was probably the most interesting game of the weekend, actually. I missed the start, left my parents, and I said to Dad, by the time I get home, Villa will be in front. And he'd messaged me at 8:07 and went, you were right, because I hadn't got home by that point. But what I saw in the game was largely an extremely good performance from Chelsea, who in the first half, in possession, basically played a back three, with Cucurella really pushing on. Like, that's what I said. Those who went would have looked at his positioning and gone, I'm really interested in that. Despite the fact the own goal... by the way, my dad didn't say, oh, yeah, your Chelsea defender scored an own goal, by the way. He wouldn't have known that bit.
Yeah, I was going to say...
No chance. But his
positioning... Cucurella's heat map is literally left winger.
Not quite, though. So that's how it played in the first half.
He's out there and he's wide.
And Madueke stayed really wide, as you would expect, on the other side, kind of like a right wing back, but basically just holding as right wing back. So it was like this hybrid system, which we had really early in the season with Chelsea, where sometimes it was difficult to read whether it was a back four or a back three. Well, I can certainly say in possession in the first half, it was very much a back three with Cucurella pushing really high on, but it was more of a back four without the ball at Cucurella left back. So we'd seen a lot of that earlier in the season in terms of Chelsea's system. But in the second half, that changed, Suj. So Cucurella inverted in the second half and went and played into midfield alongside Caicedo, which also freed up Conor Gallagher. And that put real serious pressure on Villa when they were playing out. Alla has seen on the first goal, which, by the way, I think Gallagher is ridiculously unlucky not to get a fantasy assist for that, actually. Well-taken goal by Madueke. Gallagher scores this brilliant equaliser. And Chelsea were the better team. They swarmed all over Villa. They looked like Chelsea fans must bash their head against the wall watching a performance like that because they'd have been proud of what they saw and just be like, well, where is this every week? But not only that,
I know how they feel, James.
It's not just the performance. You'd have looked at it as a Chelsea fan and gone, okay, so we saw this system at the start of the season. That on occasion worked quite well. We've seen that again. And then despite the fact that we're playing quite well, obviously they were 2-0 down, Pochettino's changed it again. You go, oh, that's really interesting. We haven't really seen that from them before. He's put Cucurella into a central area and they've changed tactical again. So you would have had both eye test, tactical, physical, all of those attributes. You'd have gone, I'm quite pleased with what I saw there.
Yep.
And then they obviously think they win it at the end as well with the controversial goal, which was disallowed. The problem here is, and the chances are we'll be doing a whole podcast on this tomorrow, the failure is of the referee not to give the decision. Craig Pawson looks straight at it, it's a foul. But then having not give the foul, I don't know if there's enough there for VAR to really be getting involved.
Is that because you don't want VAR to be getting involved?
No. It's meant to be high bar, right? It's what we keep hearing. Well, high bar.
A clear, is that clear absolute and obvious?
100% foul? I don't know. But Craig Pawson should just see it originally and go, he's looking straight at it. And so was Michael Oliver with our penalty yesterday,
yep.
The Declan Rice foul, and Ben Davis. How do you not give that?
Yep.
I knew I'm up high, and admittedly, I've got a great kind of line view of the Ben Davis foul. I'm up. I knew it was a penalty. I said to my dad when the game was continuing, I said, I'm telling you that is a penalty.
You know what they were joking?
How was it not give it?
We talk about the Michael Oliver one. The funny thing they were saying on the radio is when he's watching the replay on the screen, ironically, he's watching...
And both of them.
He's watching himself watching the incident. You're like, if you're close enough to be in the frame of the foul, how are you not seeing that?
And that's what should happen with this, because I think it is a foul and Craig Pawson should blow his whistle, yeah. And we don't have this VAR controversy at the end. Again, we'll talk about that more tomorrow. I can't be asked to do it now. But yeah, Chelsea nearly won it. I think it would have gone down as an own goal, by the way, for people that Badia show assist, disassigned goal. I think it would have ended up going down as an Olsen own goal with a disassigned assist, because I think it hits the bar and then hits the back of Olsen's hand and goes in. If Chelsea had won it, they'd have deserved it. Villa looked quite leggy. I think it's worth saying they lost players during the course of the game that didn't help them. Douglas Luiz basically had to get taken off because I think he was running the risk of getting sent off the way the game was going. And it just looked a bit light the longer the game went on. But they'll finish fourth. I've been saying this for basically since we lost at Newcastle and Villa won at Arsenal. Do you know what? Quite frankly, if Villa's win stops Arsenal winning the league, then that's another reason for me to say, yeah, do you know what? You absolutely deserve fourth. Good luck to it. I can't see Villa not winning at Brighton at the moment.
Well, there's another segue, James.
I'm getting good at this, aren't I?
another away team with 70% possession, James, was Brighton. But yet they got slapped 3-0.
But yeah, every Brighton fan would probably say deserved.
Yeah, yeah. Game state again. Stats. I mean, they went ahead early.
You know, Brighton are going to have more of the ball in a game like this.
Yeah, of course. But Bournemouth did have the higher XG and ended up winning 3-0 comfortably. I picked the wrong Bournemouth asset in Sky, James. Bloody Captain Solanke, the 9. He didn't get anything. But you can't.
At least your player turned up.
You can't. hate the process when the team that you pick the striker for wins 3-0 and he doesn't return. It's just bad luck. But that's a different game.
It's variance, Serge. You have to say variance.
Variance. Bournemouth would be super happy, man. They're having a good season. Brighton dipping away a little bit. But to beat Brighton at home 3-0 is a very good result.
Record.
Above them in the league.
Yeah. And
4 points. Wow.
I'll give you a stat in a second that's even more surprising. Record points total for Bournemouth.
Yeah.
And I think the point of that is when you consider the start, was it 10 games, 9 or 10 games before they won?
Great.
And I think it's since, I don't know, but they put the table up on Match of the Day 2 last night. Yes, I watched it back for my sins. They showed that since they lost heavily at City, which was the game after their first win, points since then, they'd be fifth.
Okay. That's incredible.
That's over a 6-month period, mate.
That's incredible.
And just bear that in mind. I think I know what the points was. It was 42 points from 25 games.
Almost your 2 points a game.
Almost. Not quite.
It's 42 from 25. So they're 8 points.
Not quite. It's running at about 1.6, 1.7. Yeah. Which, I mean, for them, that's a brilliant return. So maybe you might want to factor that in before you steam into your Arsenal players at the weekend. You can't see Arsenal not beating Bournemouth, but their game might be more of a challenge than maybe mm-hmm. we anticipate. What they're really good at, Bournemouth, and I've seen very minimal of the game yesterday, and again, this was highlighted on the TV last night, is the amount of times they win the ball high up the pitch. It was a facet of Iriola's Vallecano team that we'd looked at last summer, was like, they'll go and press high. They have a mix between man-to-man and zonal orientation when they go and press high, and they're very good at it. Very good at it. Good side. I think they'll feel... I mean, you look at that data, 42 points in 25 games, they'll be thinking, well, can we make a challenge for Europe next year? Because if they'd started well, they'd be in the conversation, they 100%
would be. They're only 1 point behind us now. So,
I think the big one for me will be they might lose a few players in the summer. They don't need to, by the way. They've got no need to sell. They're absolutely fine from a financial footing. But you can see plenty of clubs would maybe be interested in Dominic Solanke, particularly. Replacing that...
It's going to cost a fair amount of money. Yeah,
and they don't
million.
Need to sell. But that's now kind of proven at this level. That'll interest. I've said to you that I think that would be the right solution for Tottenham.
Yeah, I don't think that would be a bad signing at all for you lot.
Of course,
Semenyo maybe. He's had a pretty decent
Semenyo
season.
Went off with a serious-looking injury, unfortunately, really late on. By the way, shout out for Dango Tara's assist for Enes Unal's goal, who manages to cross the ball in and leap into the crowd and basically take a seat and watch his own assist. Not many players can claim to that. Yeah, look, really good win for Bournemouth. Really good season. The one Brighton player that people may have dived into on wildcard is Jan-Paul van Hek. His season, we think, is over through injury. So that's another one. It's certainly conceivable that people went Cher, van Hek, held on to Gusto. Jeez. You're using all your remaining transfers on defenders now.
Could be worse. Could be using them on goalkeepers. Despite their double in 37.
Oh, yeah, and Edison as well. So yeah,
I can't see myself having any Brighton when we get to 37.
No, I just think...
Newcastle away, Chelsea at home.
I mean, this is the thing. Van Hek was kind of ideal as an enabling perspective. It certainly wasn't going to block you off other Brighton players. And it's at the price we'd go, well, I'd never start him. So it's kind of... That's what the bench is, right? Okay, he's got two fixtures, I'll play him. But it wouldn't be expectation to keep a clean sheet against Isak or Palmer, would there? And there wouldn't be against Watkins this weekend either. So, as said, I think Villa will probably go to Brighton and win. They look on the floor. You listened to De Zerbi after the game yesterday. I saw your mate Kieran Maguire, who was in the away end yesterday. He's a big Brighton fan, isn't he?
Big.
He said he'd put a bet on before the game, Bournemouth to win to nil. So their confidence is like on the floor.
Wow.
Their confidence is not there at the moment. I played a couple of young boys yesterday who I must confess I don't know a lot about and can't comment on because I've obviously seen very little of the game. You're not going to go into a Brighton player between here and now. You're not going to go to a Bournemouth player, obviously, with that fixture this weekend either. And they've got Chelsea away 38. So, again, I don't think you're going to do that. Solanke owners might look to move this on at this point.
I think so.
Despite his brilliant consistency, you're playing away to the best defence in the league this weekend. So that would be understandable. Trav has played again in goal. So those who are on Neto are going to move that on. Those who've still got Senesi.
Rewarded finally.
But I'm going to guess there's a good chance you benched it yesterday. I don't know. I've not seen many, but it does feel like a typical, where were you when I needed you, mate?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the typical one.
Let's keep it moving, James. North London derby. Tottenham 2. Arsenal 3.
Did you watch the game, boss?
Game of two halves. I listened to it on the radio.
Okay. What did the radio tell you? I'm interested.
It felt quite competitive. I felt like in the first half, you shot yourselves in the foot stupidly with the breakaway goal for Saka.
What? With Tottenham? No, surely not.
It did feel like you were gathering some momentum. It sounded like Romero decided he was going to play as a second striker, basically, and was having all your chances. You had the momentum and you were kind of building up a little bit of a head of steam, a few corners, and then one cock up, they go from one end of the pitch to the other, Saka puts it in the end, and that was kind of like popping a balloon type situation. But then the second half, again, you were still going for it. When you got the first, I did think you were going to get a second, but I didn't think you were going to go on and win it. It did feel like that. And the penalty sounded... because this is when I first heard on the radio, exactly like Calvin Phillips on fucking Anthony Gordon, where he's going to swing for the ball. the way they described it was you swing from the ball, the players come from behind you, you didn't know that he was going to be there, and you've ended up kicking him.
Yeah, but this wasn't like the obstruction kind of, you know, like Gordon stopped Phillips kicking the ball. He basically just stopped him kicking it. Davis has got in and won the ball.
Right. So there's a big difference.
Yeah,
because Gordon didn't even bother going for the ball.
So Rice has never seen him come in and obviously goes to clear the ball. And Davis gets there first on the blind side from the side.
He was going for the ball, whereas Gordon wasn't.
And Rice just volleys him in the groin. Like, it's no way. It's the clearest penalty you can see.
It sounded like the way they described it, Rice didn't see he was there. No, he'd got in the way of him swinging to kick the ball, which is why I thought it sounded like what Calvin Phillips had done. And in the end, it was, that little bit too far. It felt like you would have walked away from it proud of the team for rallying, proud of the team for getting to back to 3-2 and not down in tools, but also disappointed with how you let it slip away a little bit in the first half. You go back to games like this and you think, if something hadn't... It's like, I felt like us and Leverkusen, I'm like, imagine if just the first game we'd managed to hold on for 5 more minutes way back then. It did feel like if you'd have just kept it a bit tighter in the first half, you would have put yourselves in a really good position at the end of the game in the end. Having said that, you're also playing against a good team.
Yeah, they're very good. And I'll look down the camera to our Arsenal followers, viewers, listeners and say congratulations on victory yesterday, wankers. they're a level above, unfortunately. Very mixed emotions on the game because I suppose, like, if you're going to lose, that's kind of the way to do it almost.
Yeah.
Because obviously at 3-0, you're fearing something really bad. You know, the sort of shit that doesn't get forgotten and gets mentioned in 30 years and stuff like that. You know, fives and sixes and stuff like that. And you're thinking, oh, it's weird because we didn't deserve to be 3-0 down. I think everybody could agree with that. You could say maybe Arsenal deserved to be winning at half time through their ruthlessness and stuff. But like, we didn't play badly enough to be 3-0 down. But then we didn't play well enough to have the frantic ending that we created either. It was strange. We almost played better in the first half than the second. I mean, if you look at the possession statistics through the two halves, Serge, it was 72% of the ball in the first half. I think we had 52 in the second, I think.
62 overall. So 72 in the first half, 51 in the second.
51 in the second. Okay, yeah. It was almost like Tottenham had realised that the only way that they could get back into it was to draw Arsenal out and almost, I don't know, lull Arsenal into a sense of
Arsenal only had 3 security. Shots on target.
And also it's worth saying, the two goals that we score come from individual errors, right? Raya has he's just had a complete brain fart where he's given Romero the ball for a one-on-one chance. And obviously it's a Declan Rice error in terms of the second one. So we haven't like opened them up and Raya hasn't made a save in the game, right? So to look at that and go, we deserve to win. You can't.
You had 2 shots on target. They had 3. You scored 2 goals. They scored 3.
Yeah, but they did have one more as well because Vicario made a really good save from Saka in the start of the second half. And that would have made it 4-0, right? Yep. And then, oh my God. Same failings for Tottenham. 2 big problems all season. I sat on this podcast 2 weeks ago and I said to you, Serge, or it might have even been to Clayton, I said the North London derby will be decided by how Tottenham defend corners.
It was Clayton you were talking to, yeah.
And that's essentially what decided the game yesterday.
The second goal.
It doesn't help when we actually head one in for them. I was pretty annoyed with the team selection because I think the team needed energy. I couldn't believe that Johnson didn't start. Couldn't believe it.
I was surprised with the midfield as well. I thought Bissouma would start ahead of Højbjerg.
Same. And Saar as well, in certain Bentancur. As like much legs as you can get in that team as possible. I just felt like we handed over a bit of momentum. That said, it was weird. Like, half-time, we're 3-0 down. I think we played bad. Like, we don't deserve to. I'm not sitting there, we've been battered. If you'd have said Arsenal be 3-0 up at half-time, I'd have thought, oh, wow, we got destroyed.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like that. They were just ruthless in terms of, obviously, scoring the goals and stuff. And same failings, set pieces, as said. And also how we deal on transition and turnovers when we're high up the pitch. How many times have we seen that? I mean, you've even seen it. You saw the same things happen in the Newcastle game. That's why I said it. So that ball over the top for, say, Isak, you know, couple it here for Saka and the defending of the set pieces. The defending of the set pieces at Newcastle was unbelievably bad. unbelievably bad. And you hope that with a 2-week period, you're going to do something to improve that. And it's the fine margins. And Arsenal are apart in the title race, not because they're a very good team, they are a very good team, but also because that the small moments in football that are massive, like are you good at offensive set plays and defensive set plays, which will have a contributing factor to the amount of points you get in the season, you're basically looking at one team is world class and one team's like a fucking Sunday league team. And that's part what's impacted the result yesterday. Because it wasn't across the whole game, in terms of the actual football played, there wasn't a lot between it. And it's fascinating that the recurring theme I'm hearing from Arsenal fans is like Clayton messaged me this morning, not to dig me because I'd messaged him first and said, well done and stuff. He's like, that game took years off me. Like they've ended up by the end of the game shitting themselves. Even I actually, you know, I don't like him, but I actually appreciated what Arteta said after the game. He was like, at the end, we were just praying. And yet, same thing, in that period after the second goal, we didn't really have a big moment or a big chance. Like Arsenal defended it well. And they are, as a collective, as said, the two goals they conceded are individual errors. As a collective, they are exceptional defensively. Really good.
So bringing it back to FPL, some interesting events like Timo Werner going off is probably a question on a lot of FPL managers because the question then is, you know what I'm going to say? Does that mean that Son's going to go back to the left and Richarlison's going to come in up top? Does that mean Brennan Johnson will play out on the left? But I see Johnson and Kulusevski as interchange, and I see this as an easy way to whack Sonny out to the left and bring Richarlison in.
Yeah, I mean, the other player we played, it's again, it's strange because I couldn't look at us yesterday. One thing that was clear watching the game as well, and again, it plays into the set plays. Like, they're a much more physical and stronger team than us. Part of our problems on set plays, yes, we're shit at them, but it's like, you look at our players and their players, and like, well, who's going to win it for us anyway? It's almost like if you miss out Romero, who's winning the header? Like, as good as Mickey van der Ven is, he is shocking in the air for such a big lad. You could see this, remember back to the McBurnie game really early in the season, I was like, he never won nothing against McBurnie. He's really weak in the air for a tall centre-back, and he must improve that. Because you can, oh great, you've got recovery pace. Yeah, but he's a guy against you. Like, Havertz won so many headers against him yesterday and stuff, which brings others into play. But the other player who played really well for us yesterday was Kulusevski. I thought was really good yesterday, and he's been kind of really patchy of his form. He's been out of the team a little bit. I mean, playing Kulusevski over Maddison right now would be clear as day to every single Tottenham fan.
Centrally.
Whatever.
As number 10.
Whatever. Just, I mean, take Maddison out of the team. As far as I'm concerned.
And yeah, I know you said you'd take
Sonny. Well, I wouldn't have played Son either.
Sonny out as well.
And anybody watched the game, yeah, great. Sonny's got 7 points for fantasy at the end yesterday.
Penalty.
You're seeing what I've told you. He's not at it.
And yet with a double,
you're not going to avoid him because of his historic.
There's people that I know that have armbanded him as well over Palmer, and they'll be sitting pretty now because he's got the goal and Palmer didn't get anything. But
and it's not a bad choice, right? You can say, oh, it's lucky it's a penalty. Listen, he's on penalties. Palmer's missed a one-on-one that would have won Chelsea the game, right? And it flips. Sonny's had very little otherwise. I mean, he missed a big chance in the first half, actually, when Porro, ironically as well, would have been great. Played him in over the top. But he's not playing well. He can't deal with the physicality of these sort of opponents like Gabriel and Saliba. Is a waste of space. That's why I wouldn't have played him. And yet, Chelsea have a real problem. And you saw it again in the first half the other another night, as despite how good Chelsea were, they have a real problem with runners in behind. And actually, Werner will be a miss from that perspective. So yes, it would make sense for me at this point if, Son goes back left, if Richarlison can play through the middle, that would be ideal. Play Johnson on the right, and get Kulusevski into a central area. And you flip the team, so where Maddison plays as the kind of left-sided 10, and the right-sided player plays a bit deeper. I mean, yesterday it was more of a 4-2-3-1, certainly in the first half, so it's not quite so relevant. But you play Kulusevski in like Odegaard's position as like a right-sided 10, where so then Kulusevski's close to Johnson and stuff like that. And then you hope switcher plays, you can get Son on the left one-on-one versus someone on the right. But whoever plays right back for Chelsea on Thursday night will be a physical player, assuming Gusto is still out. It's going to be Chalobah or Disasi is going to play out there. And they'll be physical with Son, and I don't expect them to do anything, Suj.
Yeah, Arsenal were the biggest rank killers for me this week, particularly Saka. 100,000 places he cost me, with his EO being at like 62%. And second to that was Haaland, and that's like 30,000 places. So Saka's ownership still really high. Havertz was up there as well. Defensively, because they didn't keep a clean sheet, it became an irrelevance in the end. Thank God for that. I just don't see where I'm going to go and get an Arsenal attacking player in this week coming, but I feel like it could be the one that's going to slap me again.
Yeah, I might.
Yeah.
I think it, for me, it's going to be either buy
it's a bit easy because you can bench him in 37.
Yeah, but he's probably more, I'm just flipping him maybe.
Yeah. The hokey cokey, we talked about it.
Yeah. I think for me this week is either buy Havertz or roll is the most likely. Like the Fabian Schär problem, I'll come back to it if I need to. And it's not a big problem anyway, because if everybody stayed fit, I'd probably be benching Cucurella in 37. And as I've not got the bench post, fine, it'll just be benching Schär instead.
Right.
That's probably what it will be for me, if that's what it comes to it. So I'd still rather move around with the pieces of the front players if I can. I just wonder if... The problem is, if I roll this week and all the attacking players make it through, there's nothing I really want to do in 37. So I can see me doing something like Jackson to Chris Wood, despite misses yesterday, putting some money in the bank that just enables me more different punt options in 38.
Right.
That's all I can see me doing if the players stay fit, basically. Havertz is the one that would be of most interest. The thing is as well, like I said to you, I didn't think he'd start one of games in 34. He did. And if you look back at that period, at say what late risers reference, he started all the games. Mm-hmm. So we're beyond this now. Plus, I think with the structure of the team, where obviously Thomas Partey's played the last couple of games and obviously Rice is playing a bit further forward, like I think that sticks. I think Havertz is going to play the nine for the rest of these games, and therefore that's the one I want. And obviously his confidence is flying at the moment. He can come across, I think, quite, we've used words in the past like passive, almost shy sometimes. Sometimes you simply think you've got no power in your shooting and stuff. He doesn't really strike through things with power. He's more about finesse. That's just his style of play. But when it's going wrong, he can look like languid and stuff like that. He looks like a player now who's got, and I could see it live yesterday, who's got an air of authority that's got confidence in his play. I mean, the pass for Saka, we speak about him not doing things with power. It's over a long distance, right? I've not seen him do that much. So he's got the confidence to play that sort of pass. So Havertz, for me, over Saka or Odegaard at this moment would be the way that I'd want to go personally.
Cool. Let's talk about, last but not least, Man City 2, Forest 0. Obviously, Forest 0. Home defeat, sorry. They were first. But yeah, comfy in the end for City.
Was it?
They gave away chances, but I did think at any point they were going to win.
So you can imagine.
I never thought they were going to be in trouble.
I've left the lane. There's nothing for me to hang about. Obviously, if we'd equalised, I'd be sitting there. I'd probably be drunk right now, because it would have felt like a win under them circumstances.
Definitely.
Right? I'd have gone out. So straight home. And quite often with games, I'll record them, right, and I'll start washing them off hour later. I was like, I can't be doing that for this. So I got home, it was about 20 minutes gone to City, get that straight on live. And they scored not long afterwards. And I needed that. Mentally, I needed that yesterday. I was like, okay, cool, that's fine. They'll be all right from here. And what I watched afterwards, I don't think I've seen Man City struggle in a football match like that for a really, really long time. Not in terms of just Forest having chances. They couldn't keep the ball, Suj. They couldn't keep the ball. It was like they're playing with hot potato for basically the last 15 minutes of the first half, and the first 15 minutes of the second half was worse.
You wouldn't say it was a particularly weakened team either. Midfield of Silva, De Bruyne, I mean, Rodri, Grealish, they should be good enough to keep the ball. Alvarez.
The thing is, because I don't have to apologise for this, because obviously I don't want Arsenal to win the league, I'm basically a Man City fan at the moment. I'm closet Man City fan, 115 charges, yeah, that's me, all that at the moment, right? I take it, I bring it.
Clip that, so, please.
No. So I'm watching City, obviously desperate for them to get results at the moment. I've been here before with like Manchester. Yeah. It was the same with Manchester United in the 90s and the noughties, because they were the only team capable of stopping them. So I used to want Manchester United to win nearly every week, right? And it's the same now with City, unfortunately. I know that makes me scummy, fine. So I'm watching them almost like a fan head on, and I'm sitting there thinking, please get John Stones on the pitch. It's the first thing I'm thinking. And you're thinking, really missing Foden. And I'm like, why is it that I'm desperate for City to do something and they're not playing like City? They're playing like a team that just the normal basic things with them, like keeping the football. And I know Guardiola mentioned the pitch afterwards. I'd come to the conclusion watching the game, there must have been something with that pitch because it was so off, Serge.
Yep.
It was just Rodri, Bernardo Silva, these guys will never give the ball away. Just so sloppy and stuff. It definitely missed Foden. I would feel way more comfortable if John Stones played centre-back. You're talking on commentary yesterday, like, oh, Aki and Akanji have been really solid. And I'm thinking, are you seeing the chances that Forest have missed there? Like, how have Forest not scored in that game yesterday? So if you've got your City returns, like you've got Kyle Walker, I know there's a number of got Gvardiol this week and stuff, like, well done.
And Haaland, a lot played him.
But from the actual clean sheet perspective, you've been very lucky to get the return.
He missed three big chances, did Forest.
Primarily Chris Wood as well, who's been doing really well, right? And I don't think, as said, he wouldn't be a terrible enabling punt to get for 36 and 38, two fixes of Sheffield United away and Burnley away. You know that they'll need points in them, almost definitely, unless they get six in the next two. In any case, okay, it's still Burnley away last day. Awanyi's still sitting in the stands, so Wood is certainly good at least for this week. I'm not going to take him out of the team because he missed a few chances, because actually, he's been returning pretty well. So I don't mind that as an enabling one. If, you know, Jackson got injured on Thursday night, for me, for example, I would consider that sort of thing. Otherwise, won't see me looking at Forest. I feel like I've picked up the right City three. Vardiol, Foden and Haaland.
Vardiol will feel like that because he just returned big.
But I feel like that when I watch him anyway because he gets so much higher than the other guys, right?
And he's, Cole Walker can overlap a little bit.
But as I said to you on Friday, Serge, what you saw with Cole Walker at Brighton, you probably won't see in the other games. It's just a strategic thing just because of Brighton and how heavy man-to-man they go. Cole Walker didn't play well yesterday. I mean, Hudson-Odoi gave him real problems. I tell you, it was great for Forest as well. Ola Aina at left-back was really good. You can come and be a backup inverted fullback for me based on what I watched yesterday. He was really good at fullback. They went with a 5-4-1, so completely different, as I said, stylistically to Brighton. Brighton want to go heavy man to man. Forest are drawing you, bang wide areas. Elanga, Hudson-Odoi, go. And it gave City problems. City were really fortunate to win that game yesterday. But in a weird way, because they were fortunate. And they did, by the end, they win the game comfortably in the last 20 minutes, don't get me wrong. But they went for a real bad period in the middle. Because they went through that and came through it, it almost feels like they went over a bigger hurdle than what was there. There's the psychological of Arsenal winning arguably their most difficult left just before that. You look at the two teams, you think they'll probably win everything left.
I do think that with City now. City's
hardest game left now is Fulham away.
I'm unlike you. I want Arsenal to win the league because I don't want City to have such a stranglehold over it. But then, obviously, I don't have the same rivalry with Arsenal that you do. But when I look at it, I see City winning everything. And probably Arsenal too, but I do see City winning everything. And it's in their hands at the end of the day. So if they do win everything...
I would really, really like to be at White Hart Lane on the 14th of May and be able to support my own team.
You won't be done by then.
Which is, I'm relying on miracles from Bournemouth and Manchester United.
It won't be done by them. But
but even if Arsenal...
I think their toughest Arsenal game draw, is you away,
if
not
Arsenal draw
away.
One game, you know, if Arsenal drew at Old Trafford and City won their other games, and then effective City are 4 points clear, then I'm happy for my team to beat them because I'll trust them to deal with you on the final day, right?
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's going to be weird. The majority of the ground will want Tottenham to lose. And every time Man City score, we will sing, oh, Tottenham, we love you. We love you, Tottenham. We do.
I think you're the toughest game left for them.
It won't be. It won't be if Arsenal win every game. Because we'll have to roll
you're
over.
Going
to
roll over?
Yeah, we'll have to.
You reckon the players ain't going to roll over, mate? That's corruption.
It's conspiracy theory,
corruption.
It is. We're going to have nothing to play for. Villa will have fourth done. Okay, we will probably have Europa done because as it stands as well, we actually literally only need 4 points.
Oh, shit.
We need 4 points to guarantee Europa League because Manchester United and Newcastle still have to play each other. So, and that's if United and Newcastle won every game in the meantime.
I had no intention of going into game week 37 with Erling Haaland. And you're basically telling me that Spurs are going to be Spursy that week and that scares the shit out of me. Going into game week 37... saying that you're going to roll over and I don't have Haaland problem.
But Man United are probably going to do the same against Arsenal on the Sunday before as well.
Oh, that's true.
So, I mean, to be honest, Man United don't need to try to roll. It's a little different. But look, it would be... United fans don't have the hate for City fans that Tottenham fans have for Arsenal. Sorry, it's a stronger rivalry. City fans might disagree with that, it's fine, but Tottenham and Arsenal have a bigger rivalry with each other than Manchester United do for Manchester City, because United have Liverpool.
Cool.
So, yeah, if it comes to that, yeah, I can tell you honestly that most Tottenham fans in the ground will unfortunately want City to win, if that's the scenario.
Cool.
But you should be aware of that from a fantasy context, genuinely. Because that will be the same. It's not me sitting here like a fan telling you that's how I feel. I'm telling you that's how the majority of the stadium will feel.
Don't you want to keep your league record against City?
Who gives a about that, mate?
Come on, they're not beating you.
If we've got nothing to play for, Serge, and we beat them to give Arsenal the title, what's the reaction going to be like?
Yeah.
There's okay. also an easy win here for Ange as well. Change a lot of the team that's just not good enough to
play the under-18s.
You know, after we've played Burnley on the Saturday, this would be the right thing to do. After we played Burnley on the Saturday, just bad sickness bug through the camp. they've all been on the toilet all week. The problem is, Ange is such a proud man. Ange will...
You will play. But, I think you
but
won't.
The players will know.
I don't think
the players will know without question, right? A lot of them are on socials and stuff. The players will be getting told by their own fans, lose the game, if that's what it comes to. Now, like I said, I hope Tottenham beat Man City, but I hope Tottenham beat Man City because Arsenal slips up in between.
We shall see about that in next week. Not next week, the week after. 14th, that's it, that fixture is, isn't it?
It's game week 37.
37's midweek set of fixtures. A few more. Sorry, there's one more game this week, which we'll probably talk about on the Diff Show on Friday.
Yes, we will.
I'll
be at the Bridge Thursday night. Yeah.
Friday deadline this week.
Yes.
Luton Everton is a Friday night game, so wherever you are, it will be a Friday deadline. 6:30, isn't it? The deadline.
UK,
so.
Yeah.
Cool. What have the listeners got to look forward to the rest of the week, James? I'm going to pull out a few questions from X.
So People's Poll podcast for tomorrow. The vote is live now to about 5 p.m. UK time. You can find that on at Planet FPL Pod on Twitter/X. Two options, the abolishment of FA Cup replays or the standard of refereeing. In the country.
I said
this time last week, those are the two options. Yes, it does look like it's going to be what you thought. The runner-up will get done on our Patreon on Thursday. That will be available for basic plus tier patrons and above. Sky Fantasy Wednesday. As it's a Friday deadline, I can't be doing two streams on a Friday, so ask James Thursday, 12 p.m. UK time. Friday, Aaron Lagor, our Leicester City correspondent, is joining me for the Fan View for a discussion on Leicester following their promotion back to the Premier League. Congratulations to our Leicester followers. I know there's loads of Leicester fans in the community, actually. Congrats to them. Our Patreon pods this week are Q&A today, UCL Fantasy tomorrow, Wednesday, Tottenham. Thursday, the runner-up to People's Poll Vote. Friday, differential show, Game Week 36 preview, which, yes, will include a review of Chelsea-Tottenham from Thursday night.
Okie dokie. If you want to support the show...
www.patreon.com/planetFPL. Keep this light above me on, please.
You also get access to FPL.team right now until the end of the season if you want to be planning out all of your transfers, access to our Slack community... prize leagues, which are pretty much done now, really, to be honest. So
that's
probably not a good selling point anymore.
It's not.
But they will be back next season.
If we can still afford it, if we've still got enough patrons.
So, you know, sign up to patrons so we can. Cool. Should we do some of these questions then on the internet?
Go for it, boss.
Wrap up the show doing that?
Yep.
Okay. This one's a difficult one. Alex, FPL Physics. What percentage of people on Bench Boost 37 will beat your Bench Boost 1 score? What did you score on your Bench Boost in 16 odd? 16, 18, I feel like?
19.
I think half.
I would say more. However, it's dependent on something happening like Gvardiol yesterday, like a defensive player on the bench, popping off.
Attacking and
defensive
returns.
Or I think the big one, this don't laugh, the big one that's going to define it will be Nicholas Jackson.
I thought you were going to say Harry Maguire there for a minute.
I think it's Nicholas Jackson will define people's bench boosts.
Oh, dear. A lot of people asking around the best Arsenal attacking asset, querying between Saka, Havertz and Odegaard. I think we've answered that. Havertz at the moment, you'd say. I'd like the punt on Havertz as well.
The thing is, whether it's one game, two games, three games, whatever you're buying it for, it's much such a small sample that any of them could be the best choice, right? But I think right now the form horse there is Havertz.
Yep. We've got a question coming in from Dr. Waleed Coca. I wonder what type of doctor he is, James.
Does he deal in Waleed?
I don't know. He wants to know if Antony is a differential pick from the Manchester United team. I think he's a differential for Manchester United, let alone for your FPL team. I didn't expect to see him in the starting lineup.
I didn't expect to see anybody ever ask that question.
Yeah, but this is where I'm confused. Look, he started the game, though.
So I thought there was every chance Diallo would play.
I'm surprised that he's even in the team. So, therefore, is he a differential pick? Yes. Would I pick him? No, because I don't think he's going to stay in that starting lineup, even though he scored.
Here's two Antony stats for you. He had 6 shots on target on Saturday.
Okay.
6. It's also his first Premier League goal of the season. Which, by the way, Burnley fans will probably be able to tell you that if you put a compilation together of the goals they conceded this season, probably about half of them come from them giving the opposition the ball in their final third, unfortunately. No, I would not be considering Antony. Realistically, if Rashford, and we don't quite know the prognosis on him at the moment, if Rashford is fit, Rashford will go back in the team, Garnacho will go on the right, Antony won't even start.
James, did you hear the Mickey van der Ven stat from the weekend? They specifically talked about it on the radio rather than on the TV. So,
hit me.
Do you know who has clocked the highest top speed in the Premier League this
Mickey
season?
Van der Ven.
Do you know what speed he hit?
Oh, like about 35 mile an hour or something.
That's rapid, mate.
But he is rapid.
He ain't Usain Bolt.
Maybe it's 35 kilometre an hour, maybe?
No, it was. Yeah, it could be. It was 22 miles an hour.
Would that be about 35 km? Okay, that's probably what I've seen.
Is he as fast as running at full speed? A elephant?
It's got to be faster.
An iguana? Or a house spider?
Oh, okay, so one of them's faster than Van der Ven, is that what you're telling
speed.
Me?
One of those animals will run at 22 miles an hour. Is Mickey van der Ven the same speed as an elephant, an iguana, or a spider?
I think it's a spider.
You think it's the common house spider?
I think it's a spider.
Incorrect, James. It's an iguana.
Okay.
Mickey van der Ven is. But I was surprised, because you've talked a lot this season about his recovery pace. And I just kind of nodded along, saying, yeah, fine. Okay, probably he's a little bit quick. I didn't realise he was the quickest player in the Premier League so far this season. Rapid. And now we know exactly how fast. Last question of the show, James, goes to Amber Redman. I bet she's...
Amber, good luck to Ipswich this week.
Yeah.
And to Leeds.
Right at the
especially to Ipswich,
end of the season,
because it's been a long time.
It would be good to see him back. I mean, there's plenty of people in Norwich that will disagree with that statement I just made. What's the longest you've ever gone without showering? Think about this. 4 days, maybe. Or 5 days.
Really? Nico, what did you say? Nico's like,
4 or 5 days. But I don't know. Like, when I went out to Africa to the Rhino Charge, we were camping out in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, fair game.
Did they have... I'm trying to remember if they had hot showers.
You've done Glastonbury or anything like that?
No, I've not done Glastonbury. No. I've done camping out in the sticks where I've been out in the woods for 3-4 days before I've had access to a shower. So washing yourself doesn't count, right? Like just washing yourself with a sink or a river or something like that. This is a shower. So yeah, I've probably longest would be 4 or 5 days that I've been without access to a shower.
I mean, look, you could be technical on that and say, like, some people prefer a bath, right?
Yeah.
Than a shower. I'm a shower person. I could only think, I'm not going to say I've had a shower every day of my life. No, that wouldn't be true. Because there are days you just sit in. You just have a pants day on a Sunday, don't you? It's like, fuck
I'd still
it.
Shower in a pants day.
Nah. You love your missus more than I love mine, so I don't really care. But no way more than like two. No way.
Yeah, no, I've definitely done four or five.
Not unless you're doing something like that, yeah. And I never have.
But every time it has been because I've not had access to a shower, yeah. As opposed to I've just chosen out of my own free choice to just not shower. I need to shower in the morning. Are you morning or evening?
Quite often both.
Yeah, can be. I don't mind both, but I can't function in the morning without a shower. Like before I've had coffee, breakfast, food, spoken to anyone, anything. First thing I need is a shower in the morning.
I need the coffee first, not going to lie.
There we go. Cool. Listeners, thank you so much for your questions. We've answered most through the conversations around the games. James obviously has run through all of the content that we've got coming up the rest of the week. Make sure wherever you're listening to the pod, you're subscribed or you hit the like button. That's only do that if you want to hear from us. You know when people will tell you to subscribe to their videos and like the videos? Hit like if you like it. And subscribe if you want to hear more. If you don't want to
listen, man, if you've made it this far in the podcast, then the like you and probably thought it was all right. Bell. Or you were here because you were here for insightful and FPL nothing advice. Else, in which case, you got the wrong podcast.
I'm proud of James for making it through the whole show with his voice. You've done well. I've so been do worse. It for that reason thank you. Alone. Stay safe, look after yourselves. Ciao for now.
Thanks, everyone. Be nice to each other and play it your way. Cue music, please. Man Child.
The Fantasy Football Show.
Sports Social Podcast Network.